Welcome to iFormRx, where we explore the evidence that matters to ambulatory care pharmacy practice. My name is Stuart Haynes, Editor-in-Chief of iFormRx, and today we're going to revisit the ACCORD study. As our listeners will recall, the Action to Control Cardiovascular Risk in Diabetes study, or the ACCORD study, examined the benefits and risk of intensive glycemic control as well as intensive blood pressure control in middle-aged adults with type 2 diabetes and at high risk for cardiovascular events. And as it turns out, intensive glycemic control, treating to a goal less than 6%, was not beneficial, and the glycemia study was stopped early in 2008 due to an increased risk in mortality. The blood pressure arm of that study was published a couple of years later and found no significant difference in the composite outcome from comparing patients who were treated to an intensive blood pressure goal of less than 120 over 80 when compared to patients who were treated to a conventional goal of 140 over 90. The results of that study led to relaxed blood pressure goals in patients with diabetes, but the ACCORD BP study has been examined and re-examined by several investigators and commentators over the years, as a result seem to be at odds with both epidemiological studies, which have predicted better outcomes with lower blood pressure, as well as more recently published trials, particularly SPRINT, that demonstrated that lower blood pressure goals were better in patients at high risk for cardiovascular disease. Well, joining me today to talk about a very recently published reanalysis of the ACCORD BP study are Kevin Cowart and Karen Sando from Nova Southeastern University College of Pharmacy in sunny Fort Lauderdale, Florida. So Dr. Cowart and Sando practice for ACORN SEED, which is the Accountable Care Organization and Research Network Services and Education Group with the NSU College of Pharmacy, which provides services to several accountable care organizations in South Florida. So Kevin, Karen, welcome to the iFormRx podcast.
It's great to be here, Stuart. Thanks for the invitation.
Longtime listener, first-time caller, Stuart. Happy to be here.
So before we get started, I want you to imagine you're seeing RL, a 44-year-old Hispanic man, in the family medicine clinic today for a follow-up visit. The patient has type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, dyslipidemia, is overweight, but is otherwise healthy. He's not experienced any micro or macrovascular complications related to diabetes. Indeed, he's been very proactive about achieving good glycemic control because both of his parents had type 2 diabetes and died of cardiovascular disease. His mother died at the age of 64 of an ischemic stroke, and his father died at the age of 57 from an MI. The patient is currently taking metformin, canagliflozin, low-dose aspirin, lisinopril, amlodipine, and simvastatin. He weighs 197 pounds. His BMI is 29.5. His blood pressure today is 138 over 84, and he had a Chem 7 A1C and lipid panel drawn this morning, and the results actually look pretty good. His blood glucose was 92. He has an A1C of 6.7, LDL cholesterol of 76, HDL cholesterol of 48, and triglycerides were 107 milligrams per deciliter. So before we get to talking about this ACCORD BP reanalysis study, can you tell us a little bit about what's going on through your mind as I read this case? What additional information might you want to collect and assess during this encounter? And are there any additional treatment options you'd be considering at this point?
So this is a pretty typical patient I think we would encounter in practice, and certainly a patient that under prior blood pressure treatment guidelines, we probably would leave things be and follow up in about 3 months. He's also well controlled with regards to his blood glucose and lipids and seems to be on appropriate medications, including a statin and low-dose aspirin. Before deciding to make any alterations in his therapy, I would want to evaluate doses for his antihypertensives and whether they are optimized. I would want to determine the adherence to his regimen and the presence of any adverse effects. For example, is he having any lower extremity edema with amlodipine, any orthostasis symptoms with his canagliflozin? I would also check to see if this patient is monitoring his blood pressure at home, as the new blood pressure treatment guidelines place more emphasis on home BP monitoring to evaluate control versus in-office measurements alone. I would also want to make sure that his office blood pressure was measured correctly and consider rechecking it in a few minutes and averaging the two together for an accurate in-office blood pressure measurement. I'd also evaluate his diet with special attention to salt intake and inquire as to any tobacco use and his level of physical activity. I also want to know if this patient is aware of his blood pressure treatment goals, as many of our patients are not, and if his doctor has discussed them with him before and what his own goals are for his own blood pressure management.
This patient's 10-year risk of an ASCVD event is 2.8% based on the ACC-AHA pooled cohort risk calculator, and his Framingham risk score is 11%. This patient is Hispanic, so the ASCVD risk score may not be entirely accurate. Also, this is on treatment with a statin, so the ACC-AHA calculator is not validated in this clinical scenario. He also has a strong family history of CVD, which is not represented in this score. We do not have a urinary albumin level, which, if persistent albuminuria is present, can be a marker for increased cardiovascular risk. So this patient's A1C is a little lower than the 7.5% inclusion into the ACCORD-BP trial, and he is a little bit younger than the age for the inclusion into the SPRINT trial. So we have to think about how this evidence would be applied in this situation. This is a great case to highlight the fence for us. Are we satisfied with his blood pressure where it is, or should we aim for less than 130 over 80?
So Karen, in the commentary you wrote for iFormerX entitled Sprinting Toward Lower Goals, a Reanalysis of the ACCORD-BP, you briefly review the original ACCORD-BP study and its findings. Can you give us a brief synopsis of the design and the results of the original trial?
Sure, Stuart. So the ACCORD study was a prospective randomized multicenter clinical trial that was designed to evaluate intensive treatment of blood glucose, lipids, and blood pressure on cardiovascular outcomes in patients with diabetes at high risk for cardiovascular disease. The BP arm evaluated an intensive systolic BP goal of less than 120 versus a standard BP goal of less than 140. The primary outcome was the first occurrence of a major cardiovascular event, which included a composite of non-fatal MI, non-fatal stroke, or cardiovascular death. Enrolled patients were an average of 62 years old with a mean duration of diabetes of about 10 years, with 1 in 3 having a previous CV event. The mean blood pressure at baseline was about 139 millimeters of mercury. Intensification of blood pressure treatment occurred per the individual investigator, but involved use of typical first-line antihypertensives, including ACE inhibitors, ARBs, and thiazide diuretics, among other antihypertensives. With a mean 4.7 years of follow-up, patients in the intensive arm required about 3.4 medications to achieve a mean systolic blood pressure of 119 millimeters of mercury versus 2.1 medications in the standard group, which achieved a mean systolic blood pressure of about 133. Overall, there was no significant benefit from intensive treatment with the exception of total and non-fatal stroke, although the number of events was small, with 34 to 36 events in the intensive group versus 55 to 62 in the standard group. There were also significantly more serious adverse events in the intensive group, including hypotension, bradycardia, hyper and hypokalemia, and elevated serum creatinine. So the reduction in stroke has to be weighed against these increased adverse events. So after these results came out, there was a lot of controversy over the interpretation because the study had much lower than expected event rates, meaning it was underpowered for the primary outcome and subject to type 2 error in accepting the null hypothesis. There was also an interaction found between the glycemic control arm and cardiovascular outcomes. Patients in the standard glycemic control arm with a baseline A1C less than 8% appeared to have a benefit with an intensive blood pressure control. So in summary, this study was a landmark trial that led to less intensive blood pressure goals of less than 140 over 90 in patients with diabetes.
Now, Kevin, in December of this past year in Diabetes Care, there was published a reanalysis of the ACCORD-BP study from some of our iFormerX colleagues, specifically Leo Buckley, Dave Dixon, and Bill Baker are among the three collaborators that published this reanalysis. So a big shout out to them. I think the reanalysis is noteworthy because it suggests that the outcomes of the ACCORD-BP study might have been different had the patient population been restricted to SPRINT eligible patients. So for those in our audience who haven't read the reanalysis paper, can you give us a brief summary of that analysis and its major findings?
Sure, Stuart. The investigators conducted a post-hoc multivariate subgroup analysis with data from the ACCORD BP study. The investigators selected subjects who were randomized to the standard glucose control arm of ACCORD BP, but also had additional cardiovascular disease risk factors, which met the inclusion criteria for the SPRINT trial. And as the title suggests, the investigators analyzed SPRINT-eligible ACCORD BP participants. The investigators of this post-hoc analysis found similar results as SPRINT. Intensive blood pressure control significantly reduced the composite of cardiovascular death, non-fatal MI, non-fatal stroke, any revascularization, or heart failure by 21% among patients with type 2 diabetes and additional cardiovascular risk factors.
So tell us a little bit about what you believe to be the key strengths and limitations of this reanalysis. Are there major sources of bias, confounders, or other threats to the internal validity of this study?
A strength of this post-hoc analysis was that the data was generated from ACCORD BP, which we know was a well-designed randomized controlled trial. And as we've already discussed, ACCORD BP was underpowered to detect a difference in the primary composite outcome. However, event rates and the post-hoc analysis were significantly higher than those in the original ACCORD BP study, allowing for demonstration of a clinically relevant reduction in cardiovascular outcomes despite the smaller sample size. Authors also analyzed outcomes for heterogeneity between those with and without type 2 diabetes by pooling original SPRINT participants with SPRINT-eligible ACCORD participants and demonstrated no difference in effect on cardiovascular outcomes between these groups.
With any post-hoc subgroup analysis, caution should be applied when interpreting results. Unplanned subgroup analyses can increase the chance of false positive, especially as the number of analyses conducted increases. While overall adverse event rates were higher in the intensive group, quantifying differences in individual adverse events could not be conducted due to differences in definitions used between ACCORD BP and SPRINT. It is unknown based on this analysis if certain adverse events may occur more or less frequently in patients with type 2 diabetes randomized to intensive blood pressure control.
So, Kevin, Karen, as you know, the new ACC-AHA guidelines for the treatment of hypertension now recommend a goal blood pressure of 130 over 80 for essentially everyone, except for frail and older adults. This, of course, includes patients with diabetes. However, the 2018 clinical practice guidelines published by the American Diabetes Association still endorses a blood pressure goal of 140 over 90 in most patients with diabetes who do not have cardiovascular disease or a very high cardiovascular risk. I think that that leaves many clinicians and patients wondering what to do. So, do you find the findings from this reanalysis sufficiently compelling to change what we should be doing in practice? What would you recommend in a case like RL?
That's a great question, Stuart. The results from this analysis are sufficiently compelling to individualize blood pressure goals for our patients with diabetes and not to treat everyone with a one-size-fits-all approach. For patients at high risk of cardiovascular events, including multiple risk factors, a blood pressure goal of less than 130 over 80 is recommended and supported by this analysis. However, in someone at relatively low cardiovascular risk, without a prior event, or someone who cannot tolerate adverse effects from multiple blood pressure medications, a blood pressure goal of less than 140 over 90 is certainly reasonable. A patient's individual level of cardiovascular risk should be determined and preference explored as to what the patient places more value on.
So in getting back to our patient RL, he is young and otherwise healthy with a strong history of cardiovascular disease, including a family history of stroke and MI. The patient has been motivated to better care for his diabetes due to this family history and has done a great job achieving those goals. Based on the results of this analysis, I would feel comfortable aiming for a goal of less than 130 over 80 in this patient. I would first start with optimization of the current antihypertensive regimen and consider moving the ACE inhibitor to bedtime dosing, which has some evidence that it can reduce cardiovascular events and is recommended in the ADA guidelines. I would also emphasize lifestyle modifications, including weight loss and reducing salt intake, which may help to achieve a lower blood pressure without adding additional medication. Emphasizing that lifestyle changes can substantially reduce blood pressure without adding additional medications could be a motivating factor for this patient as well.
I agree with Karen. I would like to add that based on the 2017 hypertension guidelines, I would advocate for home blood pressure monitoring for this patient to evaluate his therapy and ensure he's achieving treatment goals. Since intensive follow-up was needed to achieve the outcomes in SPRINT and in CORE BP, referral to a pharmacist-managed hypertension clinic for close follow-up and titration of medications may improve cardiovascular outcomes. And we know from previous research that a team-based approach to care involving a pharmacist has been associated with improved achievement of goal blood pressure when compared with usual medical care.
So Karen, Kevin, I really want to thank you both for joining me today to discuss the treatment of hypertension in patients with diabetes and the goals of therapy. I think it's clear from your comment that stringent goals with close follow-up are important for everyone, and that while the 140 over 90 goal is certainly appropriate for patients at low risk, the more stringent goal is also clearly beneficial to many patients, particularly with diabetes, because they have multiple cardiovascular risk factors. Well, tell us what you think. Only iPharmaRx members can leave comments and use the interactive features on the site. You can become a member of iPharmaRx. It's free, so sign up today. And until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, Editor-in-Chief of iPharmaRx, signing off.